you're aware of the Terry Lynn McClintock case?
Yes.
Yeah. So the Terry Lynn McClintock case is about in November, she was in a medium security prison, I believe, and she was she was transferred to a healing lodge, an Indigenous healing lodge, and there was a big outcry that she was transferred, and she was eventually transferred back to prison. And I think some of the writing around this kind of really embodies a lot of the stigma about people who are incarcerated, in certainly in journalistic writing. There was a headline from the CBC on November 8th, child killer Terry Lynn McClintock transferred from Healing Lodge to Edmonton Prison. So this is after she went back, I suppose. So, and it's hard because that particular story is quite heartbreaking and had a lot of people were really hurting still from the impact of that original crime. But what do you think the impact is of constantly associating a person with a crime that they were incarcerated for?
So there's a few things here that I'm going to take us through, especially from the journalistic point of view. So the first thing is language. So Elizabeth Fry Society, for example, is very clear on this, that we, you know, nobody uses language like offender, inmate, because right away there's an argument being made when you choose to use that language. So if you say offender testifies in court, you're already setting something up in the headline about who's being criminalized, who's reliable. So incarcerated people, or simply the woman or the men, you know, you can use just person language. And that is actually really important, right? Because we have all kinds of words like convict, offender is what they use at the level of CSC, right? So that's one of the questions you raise when you say child killer, murderer, right in the title. I think the second piece is we've seen this happen in Canada all the time. So a lot of law around particularly things to do with how much we sentence people and stuff has been made, is made in this way. So in Canada in the 60s, until the 60s, a life regime was 10 years, and then there was an assessment, right? And then there was a case where somebody got out on parole and they killed somebody, and you know, people got up in arms, and that's when we changed to life 25. So we keep seeing this happen, this very reactive thing. Well, there'll be one case that people get very upset about, and then we change entire legislation and law for everybody. And then it takes decades to unpick that, right? So once something's in the law, once we say life 25, when you start saying, well, why not 10, then it's like, why are you soft on crime, right? So no politician wants to come out and then say, I'm actually interested in challenging the life regime for murder, right? Nobody's going to say that because you're going to lose in the election. Everyone's going to say, well, are you pro-murder? So it becomes very difficult to do anything. So with the Healing Lodge, you have this one case that's obviously very upsetting to people, and it's a very visceral case, and then you get people saying, should we even have healing lodges? So it's not just that this one went to it, but now the whole idea of a healing lodge comes into question. So my point here is none of this is about evidence. None of this is about what we want to call, you know, so-called best practices. None of this is about crime prevention. None of this is about what actually works, because in the case of the woman being sent to the healing lodge, I mean, that's assessed by the supposed experts, right? So on the institution supposed to be the expert on people's risk assessments and placements and what their programming is and what rehabilitates them, right? So if they make an assessment that says this, it is appropriate for this person to be placed here, why does the public or a politician override that, who doesn't know anything about their treatment plan, doesn't know anything, haven't talked to them, you know, you have no access to any of the information about them, and the so-called experts have told you this is what's appropriate, right? So you have this kind of way that the public then steps in because of public outrage, and politicians step on top of that. And then even the tools we have, the assessment tools we have, the parole officers, the psychiatrists, they get overruled. So that's not an evidentiary-based idea. So I think it's very important to understand that we can't have a justice system that runs on emotion. That's why we have, in the first place, a crown, and it's you versus the state, right? Because it's not the victim, ever. A case isn't the victim versus the offender. We understand that a crime is committed against the state, right? Against the crown, against the province, right? And that idea is that we don't deal with this individually. We deal with it... it has to be dealt with in an objective way, right? That's the kind of... And now, I'm not saying I believe in this. I'm not saying I think the courts are objective. I'm just saying this is the principle. But that is the idea of a justice system, not the practice of it. So you have all this emotion and all this feeling that people have, and that feeling always turns into people just want to see people punished, and they want to see them punished in particular ways. So they not only want to see them punished, but there's an idea that there should be these particular levels of deprivation. So why should they be watching TV? Why should they get a hot shower? So people imagine these ideas that they shouldn't have a shower, or they shouldn't have this, they shouldn't have that, right? So, but this is the kind of idea that people have, that you shouldn't have a mattress, you shouldn't have light, you know? And they imagine these extreme conditions of deprivation, which are, of course, usually cruel and unusual punishment. And then when you talk about prisoner rights, it's sort of read as, oh, well, you know, you just love serial killers, right? But, of course, we don't advocate for rights because people are good people. Rights aren't about, I don't have rights as a black person depending on whether I'm good or bad or whether I have a job or not. I have rights not to be stopped by the police unfairly and illegally because that is my right. And it doesn't matter if I just came from kicking a puppy, you know, in my house, I still have that right. It is not a judgment upon me. A right is a right. It is unnegotiable, right? And that's the problem that people have, that if we say that no rights for bad people, you know, these are the worst people, like this person killed a child, so the public should be able to decide on punishment. How far do we extend that principle? When do we stop extending that principle? For example, provincially in jail, 80%, between 2/3 and 80% of people at any one time are on remand, meaning they're innocent. So should they be subject to particular conditions of deprivation if they're innocent? But if we say it's okay for these bad people over here, then doesn't it become okay for everybody? So this is a conversation that we really have to start having about what rights mean and what it means when we advocate for basic human rights. Because questions that we're asking around prisoner rights are those kinds of questions. And they always get kind of turned into emotional questions like, do you support this person killing a child? And obviously, nobody supports somebody killing a child. Obviously, we all know that's bad. And obviously, we know there's harm and that people are hurting. And of course, those people are angry. And nobody should be asking them to forgive or to do this. They have every right to be enraged. They have every right to be angry and hurt. And they have every right to the healing they want and need. But we as the public should not be legislating based on how much somebody annoys us, based on how bad we think a crime is. That is not a justice system. That is a vengeance system, and that's the problem. So that's a long answer, but you sort of constantly see this happen, and it's very, very hard at a kind of media level for people not to engage in this very emotional conversation, because that conversation is easy. Child killer goes to healing lodge. Child killer gets slapped on the wrist. That's an easy headline, and people are going to react to that. You're going to get lots of clicks. People are going to listen. Nobody's going to pick up an article that says bunch of lawyers argue about meaning of rights. You know, that's boring, and it's complex, and it asks complex things of us, right? We have to understand that people can do bad things, but does that mean they're an entirely bad person? We have to understand the gray areas. We have to think about the complexities, and that nobody wants to do that, and certainly people don't want to do that when they're hearing a headline on the radio, or, you know, they're just listening on talk radio, they're getting a soundbite on Twitter. And so the work that people are being asked to do is very complex, and of course people don't want to do that, and the news wants to feed into a very simple read of things. So child killer goes to healing lodge, murderer out on parole, you know, and those are very, very easy headlines. But every time we've succumbed to that, we've seen what happens.